Stop right there. An order from the Public Utility Commission to put the brakes on outrageous power bills after the winter storm. That and more today on the Texas Standard.
Texas Standard is a production of KUT Austin, KERA North Texas, Houston Public Media, and Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.
I'm David Brown. As lawmakers step in to get answers to ongoing questions about who and what's to blame for the meltdown in utilities statewide, another long-term ripple effect looms, the impact to Texas's reputation. We'll hear more. Also, hurricanes, pandemic, then a winter storm, what compounding natural disasters can do to mental health in Texas, and what to look out for yourself. Plus, with the power back on for most, many Texans still dealing with water issues, expert advice on tap, and much more when the Texas Standard gets underway right after this. No matter where you are, it's Texas Standard time on this 22nd day of February 2021. I'm David Brown. Great to have you with us. On Sunday, the Public Utility Commission, or PUC, issued two emergency orders at the behest of Governor Abbott. Order number one, power companies must stop disconnecting customers for non-payment of electricity or water bills. And order number two, those companies must stop sending bills or invoices to customers until the PUC works through the issues of how to financially manage the situation right now, which, not to be too technical about it, is an absolute mess. These two orders are clearly a response to stories grabbing media attention nationwide about sky-high bills, adding insult to the injuries of last week. The New York Times reported the story of one power customer in Texas who, though managing to hang on to his electricity through the storm, got a bill for $16,752. On Saturday, Governor Abbott met with the Lieutenant Governor and House Speaker, as well as chairs of the Senate Finance and House Appropriation Committees, among others, to find a way to address the de facto meltdown of the power grid and what comes next, according to the Texas Tribune. A couple of things we know are forthcoming. Lawmakers will be questioning key figures in the utility industries this week to find out what exactly went wrong and who's to blame. Something else we know, that notion of Texas exceptionalism is sure to take a hit. So writes the Trib's executive director and co-founder, Ross Ramsey. Ross, do you fare okay through all this?
Yeah, we got to the other side, and, you know, it's like spring weather now.
Yeah, it's unbelievable, actually, here in the Texas capital city. How do you foresee the events, though, of this past week affecting the state's reputation?
Well, I think we had a big failure, and we had a big failure in really, really basic services. And I think the people who tout the state, you know, for economic development purposes, for tourism, for all of those things, have a hickey now that they have to explain. You know, isn't that the state where you can't keep the lights on?
Of course, a lot of people would say, well, this is one of those very rare events. And when you take into account the sort of business-friendly environment and so on and so forth, I can already hear the rejoinders now, can't you?
Sure. But, you know, part of the issue here is, why did the power go off? And why did we not have everything weatherized the way we were? There's going to be a bunch of investigations, a bunch of finger-pointing, blaming and shaming, all of that. But the early information is that the state, after similar storms, most recently in 2011, didn't do all of the things that might have made this just another really bad weather day and or weather week. And we all suffered for it. And the question is, you know, are we trading, for example, low electricity prices for, you know, commercial and industrial clients for the preparations that should be in place but that are expensive?
So, put another way, the pursuit of Texas exceptionalism might have gotten us into this mess in the first place.
Well, that's part of it. The other one is, you know, we have our own grid, as everybody knows now, who didn't know we even had a grid 8 days ago. The state is not connected to the rest of the country, and there was nobody to call for power who wasn't already using it. If you were in another state or in a state where this happens a lot, you can borrow power from places where they're not using as much. Texas doesn't have that advantage, and that's going to be one of the things under examination.
You cover politics a lot there at the Texas Tribune, and I'm curious there, Ross, what do you see the accountability process looking like, what with the legislature in session right now, and this an emergency item on the governor's agenda?
I think there's a lot of heat on this, not to try to be funny about it, but I think there's a lot of political heat here. everybody wants to get to the bottom of it. The voters are ticked off, and the politicians are responsive to that. And the legislature happens to be in town. So you've got all of the elements for, if not a lot of change, certainly a lot of blaming. I think we're going to get some change out of this, but I don't know what form it will take. It kind of depends on how long people are angry about this and whether they can get to some easily identifiable and solvable problems.
Who's on the hot seat here? You have a governor who's going to be running for re-election next year. You've got the head of ERCOT, and the governor's calling for him to resign, as I recall, right?
Right. I think it goes all the way to the top. You know, ERCOT works for the Public Utility Commission. The Public Utility Commission is appointed by the governor. They all abide by laws set by the legislature. This comes back to the state's elected officials. That's who voters are going to lean on here. And that's, you know, if you're going to get any change, that's where it's going to come from.
But you mentioned that 2011 winter storm. And I think a lot of people look back at the deregulation that took place in 1999. How convinced are you that we're going to be seeing some more fundamental change in the way that our power is distributed in Texas?
I'm not. You know, what happened after 2011 was eventually, you know, the people who wanted things the way they were, who were benefiting most of the time, you know, when there's not an outage or something, prevailed in that fight. This really depends, like so many things, on how much the public wants change and whether the public is going to keep its interest on this long enough to force it.
That is the key. Ross Ramsey's co-founder and executive editor of the Texas Tribune. We'll link to his latest over at texasstandard.org. Ross, thanks again.
Thank you, David.
Food and formula for babies are among the items that folks have been most desperate to get their hands on over the past week or so. The winter storm caught so many parents off guard who didn't have enough supplies on hand. What to do? Well, for more on that, we turn to Clara Cooper. She's the executive director of Life Houston, Inc. That stands for Local Infant Formula for Emergencies. It's a food bank for baby formula and food. Clara, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Give us an update on the situation as far as access to baby food and formula in Texas goes. Last week, we were hearing from a lot of parents of infants saying they could not locate any infant formula.
Well, it's, of course, you know, it's just not only do we have the weather situations in Houston, we also have, remember, we're still under during a pandemic. So a lot of our people that we normally would see and people who would probably rely on us for emergency formulas did not have access. Of course, when you talk about with the bad weather and storms, when you talk food insecurity, you have the issues where people have an access. That's the first thing when you talk about food insecurity. They have the lack of access to baby formulas, if you will. With the power outages, you notice that a lot of the stores were closed. Unfortunately, our offices, we were hit as well. We could not open many of our offices as well. So many of our clients or people who would have relied on our services did not have access to our services.
Were you aware of any shortage specifically of formula for babies? That was something that we were hearing from people who were trying to make their way to the few supermarkets that were open last week and just finding the shelves bare.
Well, watching the news, if you notice, in terms, particularly in our areas, it was the access for getting to those. They have limited access to getting to those grocery stores.
Sure.
And like particularly in my areas, many of the stores were closed because of power outages and such. Large trucks did not have the access to bring extra resources and supplies into those areas. So again, it was double hit trying to get to those stores. And if you did get to those stores, you find, like I was one of those people as well, trying to get to those stores, and you notice the shelves that were bare. And of course, since this is something I do on a daily basis, I did look at many of the aisles to see if formula was available, and there was very limited supplies. And it's not only that, some of our clients or many of the clients have special needs where they need specialty formulas, if you will. And some of those stores who were probably open did not have the access or did not have the resources or supplies that our clients or clients with special needs for the infants needed.
If you're a parent who needs a food or formula for their infant and you can't find it, get out to get it. What should you do? What resources are available for those folks?
Well, I always tell people they can, you know, for first they can call us and we can help them identify other resources if they're in our areas or if not in areas. So one, we do have a website, they can contact us, and we are on social media. I always, always tell people what they can do now that the cities, many cities are open, they can go to one of the local WIC offices, which stands for WIC, Women, Infants, and Children, to get access. However, if they're trying, if they're new client to WIC, there is going to be a wait for them to get registered. So again, they can call us and we can help them in terms of emergency formulas. They can also try to call their local United Way 211 or their local food bank. Many food banks and soup kitchens, if you will, they have food for families, but many do not offer the services like we do for infants between 0 to 12 months of age.
If you need baby formula but you can't get it, are there safe alternatives, or are there alternatives that you definitely shouldn't use, especially for the littlest babies?
I'm glad you asked that question, because before clients come to us, many of them told us that they, you know, I heard some tragic stories of, you know, what people are trying to make ends meet or try to feed their infants. Absolutely not. They really need the formula, because formula has the right nutrition, the value that the nutritional value that an infant would need, particularly that child's needs. Like I mentioned before, there could be specialty formulas that those infants need. So again, there is no substitute, if you will. You cannot take milk or a regular powdered milk and shake it up. That does not work. That does not benefit the parent or particularly the infant. So we would try to encourage them to contact us. There are some agencies that we partner with. That's one of the things we tried to do smarter in 2020, especially during the pandemic, partner with other agencies who already had access to families that they were already feeding, and then just tag on our services, if you will. So again, if they can, call us. We can help them as well, or go to our website.
We're going to have a link to that website and more information for those still needing more information. Clara Cooper is the Executive Director of Life Houston, a food bank for baby formula and food. Ms. Cooper, thanks so much for speaking with us on the Texas Standard.
Thank you.
Let's find out what Texans are talking about on this Monday. Wells Dunbar, our social media editor, is back. Wells, what are you hearing?
Hi, David. Well, the big thaw is underway in Texas as many of our friends and listeners begin to process the events of last week with the return of basic services, electricity, water throughout much of Texas. However, many still in the thick of it and still wanting for basic services, David. Hearing many of these stories on our Facebook page, Kimberly Palomo says, I'm in rural East Texas. We haven't had water for a week now. A crew from California arrived yesterday. We're just praying and hoping they get it fixed soon. Jonathan Henderson says there's still no water at his apartment in Grapevine, but he's back at work. Meanwhile, in Central Texas, Barbara Stansfield Terry says she's still boiling water, still angry at the debacle over our electrical grid. And Leslie Jenkins shares the sad news that her daughter's first home, a condo purchased in November, is being demolished to the studs after a catastrophic water failure there. The stories we're hearing, David, yes, indeed. And unfortunately, there's more and some welcome news as well. Perspectives coming from our friends and listeners. I'll be back with those later in the program.
Yes, indeed. We'd love to hear from you, Texas. You know what to do. Look for Texas Standard on your social media platform of choice. Wells Dunbar is looking for you. And he'll be back with more of the talk of Texas in about 35 minutes as the Texas Standard continues.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Tejas Storytelling Festival, online March 11th through the 14th, featuring over 60 storytellers, sharing the magic and mystery of storytelling and music. Tickets available at TejasStorytelling.com.
Is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. Record cold, power outages, and boil water notices have wreaked havoc for millions of Texans. Les talked about how the winter blast frayed the nerves of farmers and ranchers who power the nation's food supply. KERA's Stella Chavez reports.
As snow fell and temperatures plunged, most Texans hunkered down indoors. Not Faith and Bill Ellis, though. They bundled up and hopped on their tractor, which this week doubled as a snowplow.
We're headed out to feed these cattle, check on them.
That was Wednesday. The next day, they were back out on their 80-acre farm, a couple of hours northeast of Dallas. They plowed through 2-foot snowdrifts to check on their 25 head of cattle, plus pens of chickens and rabbits. They also grow mustard and collard greens, cabbage and carrots. When bad weather hits, that means more work.
It's a constant, almost around-the-clock thing. When we finally come in, right when the sun goes down, we're exhausted because we've been out 2 to 3 times during the day, trudging through, 2 feet of snow, trying to make sure that produce and animals are taken care of so that when all this thaws out, we can get the produce and the animals to the market.
Ellis and other Texas farmers say it's too early to know the full extent of crop damage. They'll have to wait till things thaw out. All of their animals made it through the storm. Ellis worked to harden their cattle for this weather. Plenty of food plus their coat helps them retain heat. One complication, this all hit in the middle of calving season.
The calves are, being born and they're wet and they've got to get them warm. And for those, we will bring up closer to the barn and then open the barn for the mothers and their babies to get in. But it's a matter of kind of herding them up there so that they can do that.
3 hours southwest, outside Waxahachie, John Paul Dineen and his wife Heather farm 700 acres. They raise cattle and pigs and grow wheat, corn, and milo.
We woke up, at 0 degrees. We've been 7 days below 32. The fuel in our equipment has gelled. We did not have additive in there to keep that from happening because that's never happened to us before.
That meant he couldn't start his tractors for 2 days. What really threw them was the power cycling off and on.
Those things really throw a kink in things because you have, heat lamps trying to keep pipes warm, heaters trying to keep equipment warm. When you don't have consistent electricity, then you can't have that stuff to where you can start it up. And it has really, been an awakening for us.
Earlier in the week, State Agriculture Commissioner Sid Miller told Fox News Business he was worried about the food supply chain.
The shelves are bare in our grocery stores of any dairy products. We've got poultry producers that are suffering. We've got little chicks in hatcheries that can get no power, so they're freezing to death. We've got eggs and incubators that get no heat, so they won't ever hatch. It's inexcusable, the situation we're in.
John Paul Dineen says he's talked to farmers across the state. Some lost citrus crops in the Rio Grande Valley. Others had cattle challenges.
We do have friends that have had calves lose ears because of frostbite. We have had one friend that has lost 10% of their calf crop because of the bitter cold.
He wants people to keep this in mind. If the next time they're at the grocery store, they see the meat counter not fully stocked. I'm Stella Chavez in Waxahachie.
Support for coverage of business comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider. Proud to be on the job with Texans who are working safe and keeping communities strong. More at texasmutual.com/on the job.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. By now, the lights are back on for most Texans as the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, ERCOT, says power supply now exceeds demand. But as the dust settles after a chaotic week for America's so-called energy capital, long-term effects of the Arctic blast are becoming more clear. Matt Smith is Director of Commodity Research for Clipper Data, and he joins us every couple of weeks here on The Standard. Matt, welcome back.
Thanks, David.
Well, we heard about how some oil and gas infrastructure took a hit as temperatures plummeted, refineries losing power, wellheads freezing, all that sort of thing. How's the oil and gas market been affected?
Well, David, the supply side of the picture has been much more affected than the demand side. So granted, the inclement weather has dented driving demand, but it has been, to your point there, the energy infrastructure that has taken the biggest hit and all the way along the supply chain. So oil production in Texas and particularly in the Permian Basin was considerably impacted due to both freeze-offs because of the low temperatures and because of power outages. And so it's been touted that about 4 million barrels per day of U.S. production went offline at the peak there. Wow. But we've also seen the refinery, such a huge amount. And the refinery sector as well has faced similar challenges. So, the U.S. Gulf is home to nearly a half of all U.S. refining capacity, and a considerable chunk of that was shut down last week due to power outages and the risk of equipment freezing up. So all along the supply chain, it was hit.
That means prices start to spike, of course, and I guess we're still seeing some of the ripple effects there. What if anything, does that tell us about recovery in the industry sort of at large?
Well, it tells us in terms of the retail gasoline price, it's higher on a week-on-week basis, and it's like by about 12 cents, something like that for Texas, up 22 cents versus a month ago. But the thing is, that's more of a bigger picture move than a Texas-specific issue. So we've actually seen a similar rise on the national average to that, and it's because of that oil price rise as opposed to supply-side concerns specifically with Texas. Not to say that there wasn't any issues. You know, there's a huge amount of issues, but but as temperatures have risen and as power's come back on, you know, panic buying and supply issues have eased on the gasoline side of things, and that will continue to happen going ahead here as Texas returns to a sense of normalcy. But in terms of that oil price, you know, we have seen it continuing to move higher. It did take a little dip on Friday, but we're back above $60 a barrel on WTI there. And that's just that fear of production being offline, mm-hmm. that huge chunk, and how quickly or how slowly that comes back to market.
Yeah, WTI, West Texas Intermediate, the benchmark there. Want to talk a little bit about Governor Greg Abbott's ban on exporting natural gas out of the state. Last Wednesday, he said he'd be stopping natural gas leaving Texas through February 21st, which was yesterday. Was that really being upheld? Did it have an impact on the energy market as a whole, from what you can tell?
It seems that was a knee-jerk reaction. And, it's understandable, you know, that the declaration was made last Wednesday, you know, the height of these electricity outages. Mm-hmm. And so it was put in place. But we have actually seen, as fears have dissipated, the emphasis taken away from that area. We're seeing LNG exports out of the U.S. Gulf increasing again now. So it hasn't really been as much as a limit as you would perhaps expect. It was very contentious as well. You know, it was some were calling whether it was actually a violation of the U.S. Constitution's Commerce Clause. So in the grand scheme of things, it hasn't had too much of an effect on that side. And going forward, it shouldn't do as things return to normalcy in terms of supply.
It has been a crazy 7 days, that's for sure. And Matt Smith has been monitoring it all as Director of Commodity Research at Clipper Data. Matt, thanks again for the update. Sure to appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good. Thanks, David.
Support for Texas Standard comes from the Texas College Savings Plan, administered by the state of Texas. Families can save for tuition, room and board, books, and other qualified education expenses at eligible schools nationwide. Learn more at texascollegesavings.com.
From the Texas Newsroom, I'm Joseph Leahy. Governor Greg Abbott is pledging state action to help people facing sky-high electricity bills after last week's winter storm. KERA's Christopher Conley reports the Public Utility Commission of Texas has now issued a moratorium on energy shutoffs as state lawmakers consider options.
In January, the electric bill for Shannon Mars's family was just shy of $260. But so far, this month's bill is more than $10,000.
You know, we were trying to explain this to our 7-year-old kids, how much money this meant. And we said, this could be a car.
Texas's deregulated electricity market allows for the sale of unusual policies like the ones the Marses have, which is designed to fluctuate with the wholesale market. When the price of wholesale electricity spiked dramatically during last week's brutal winter storm, they couldn't get out of their plan. Widespread outrage is forcing public officials to consider aggressive intervention in the state's energy market. I'm Christopher Connolly in Dallas.
U.S. Senator Ted Cruz of Texas is taking heat from some fellow Republicans for flying to Mexico with his family during the state's winter storm crisis when millions were stranded without power and water for days. Central Texas Congressman Michael McCall says Cruz should have stuck with his constituents.
When a crisis hits my state, I'm there. I'm not going to go on some vacation. I know Mr. Cruz called it a mistake, and he's owned up to that. But I think that was a big mistake.
McCall, who's the top-ranking Republican on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, was speaking to CNN on Sunday. The University of Texas Rio Grande Valley is apologizing for turning away two people eligible for COVID-19 vaccinations on Saturday because they could not prove they live in the United States. Proof of residency and citizenship is not required to get the vaccine, according to the Texas Department of State Health Services. UTRVG spokesperson Patrick Gonzalez confirmed the university did not follow state guidelines.
And we interpreted a certain way, and now we know that it was the wrong way.
Abraham Diaz, who lives in San Juan, says his father was one of the people turned away. Diaz says his dad called him upset and embarrassed after waiting in line for 4 hours at the UTRVG vaccine clinic, only to be wrongly told by a person working there he was not eligible for the shot.
He said that she told him in front of everybody, you know, you don't have a social, so we can't help you at all, and it's only for U.S. citizens.
The university is working to reschedule individuals wrongly turned away from getting the vaccine. I'm Joseph Leahy for the Texas Standard.
Support for these Texas headlines comes from the University of Texas at Dallas, where 4 million square feet in new or renovated space has been added in the past decade. More at utdallas.edu/bright. UT Dallas, moving at the speed of bright.
33 minutes past the hour, Texas Standard Time. I'm David Brown. At the beginning of the pandemic, time seemed to stretch to a point where months seemed to go on forever. But the nightmare of last week likely felt like it would never end for many, considering the many disasters Texans have faced in recent times, from historic hurricanes, a pandemic, now the winter storm. If you're feeling overwhelmed, well, you wouldn't be alone, that's for sure. So we've asked Jeff Temple, professor and licensed psychologist at UT Medical Branch, to join us. Professor, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you so much for having me.
Dealing with these compounding environmental episodes got to take its toll, no?
Absolutely. You know, I used to be a proponent of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, but the research is starting to tell us that's that needs to be flipped on its head. It's the stressor after stressor after stressor is just it's hurting us psychologically. Our immune system is going to have some long-term mental health effects for sure.
What does the latest research say when it comes to compounding these stressors as you're describing it?
Absolutely. So we know that people who have experienced a stressor in the past are more vulnerable to the effects of a future stressor. So, for instance, we know with combat veterans that those that experienced the stress before going to combat are more likely to develop PTSD than those who did not experience a stressor prior. And so we're starting to see the same thing, that those affected by Hurricane Harvey, for instance, are going to be probably that much worse off having been vulnerable to this past week's winter storm.
I think people feel or have a sense of the idea that they are more vulnerable somehow because of these compounded stressors. Yet I think a lot of folks don't know what to do with it. You know, knowing that you're facing this is one thing, but then what? What do you tell people who are having to go through, from Harvey to the pandemic and now all that folks dealt with last week? And by the way, a lot of folks across the Lone Star State trying to get back into gear, you know, get the kids back to school and get back to normal when you just don't feel normal.
You know, absolutely. And I promise to address your question, but I think it's, you know, when someone like me, an upper middle class white guy who has job security, you know, I feel the effects, and it affects my world, and I'm struggling and I'm stressed, and I can't imagine what it's like for someone, a low income person or a person of color who experiences everyday stress and structural violence and racism on top of all these current environmental events and the pandemic. It has to be overwhelming for everyone, and maybe especially more of our marginalized communities. So what do I tell them? You know, I think it is a lot of working with them. And, I'm not a huge fan of the word resilience. I think that we need to be resilient, and we need to come back from this, and we need to have some what we call post-traumatic growth. And we have seen that with hurricanes and like Harvey, and where we come together as a community and we start to realize and appreciate things that maybe we didn't in the past, and that is helpful. But when there is stressor after stressor, it becomes more difficult. And so what I would tell them, I think, is take care of some of your basic necessities, if at all possible. Get back to that Maslow hierarchy in the sense of make sure you're exercising right, sleeping right, eating right, not drinking too much, and taking care of some of those basic necessities before really tackling some of the bigger problems. I think what I would also say, and this might sound like a cop-out, but I think we need more structural changes, and we need to take care of people from a policy level. So if that means livable wages, taking care of the things that are affected by climate, building an Ike dike, for instance, these types of things are necessary to inoculate us from future environmental events.
What should people look out for as a sign of this is getting too much? I mean, and what can someone do in that situation?
Sure, absolutely. So one of the things that a few of the things that we'll see are things like an increase in anxiety and maybe some things like PTSD, where we're starting to have nightmares and starting to reimagine this. For instance, for me, it's been any trickle of water that I hear, I get nervous that another pipe has burst. But worrying about stuff that maybe you didn't used to worry about, those types of things would be a good sign that that maybe it's affecting you more than normal. And I'll also say, though, that everyone's probably at that point right now. So if this lasts longer than a couple weeks, then that's when you know that you might need a little extra help.
Need to reach for some help. Jeff Temple is a professor and licensed psychologist at the University of Texas Medical Branch. Professor, thanks again for speaking with us on the Texas Standard.
Really appreciate you. And thanks for doing this very important story.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas CASA, advocating for a safe and positive future for all Texas children in the child protection system. Volunteer information at becomeacasa.org. Every child has a chance. It's you.
It's the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. Water and power is back for many, if not most, Texans right now, but bouncing back from disaster has historically been easier for white, wealthier communities in Texas. Houston Public Media's Elizabeth Trovall has more from local leaders and advocates who say last week's storm and its aftermath could prove to be yet another devastating blow to communities of color.
After a week with intermittent power and water, Houston area folks are recovering from yet another disaster. While some are filling out insurance claims and calling plumbers, low-income communities may not have those options. Chriselle Pillay advocates for equitable disaster response through the Home Coalition.
Typically, folks say, well, oh my gosh, that's an insurance claim that I have to make. But I'm thinking about my neighbors who, in many cases, don't have insurance and what that's going to look like. And these are still people that, of course, many are still recovering from Harvey.
Pillay says some of her neighbors in Cashmere Gardens needed house repairs before the winter storm and are living in compromised homes.
One of my neighbors, I look at his house, it's just amazing that in my mind that he's still able to stay there. But he's like, I don't have any other choice. Like, where else do I go?
Pillay started her organization in the wake of Harvey to make disaster recovery more equitable. Research shows Black and low-income communities in the region were less likely to have recovered a year after the storm. A Rice University survey also reveals that more than half of Black and Latino immigrant respondents could not come up with $400 to meet an emergency expense.
So the recovery is going to be very delayed, very slow.
Aisha Siddiqui leads the nonprofit CHAT, which works with refugees engulfed in. She says the people she serves often don't have cars, they struggle with English, and live in rundown apartments with poor management.
If the pipeline broke or bursted or ceiling opened or something, they're stuck with it.
Siddiqui says this population relies on small stores in walking distance for food that may not be as well stocked as HEB or Kroger that are also struggling to stock shelves. But it's not all doom and gloom. Zainab Bakit, a Rice University researcher who works in Third Ward and Sunnyside, says while these neighborhoods do face hardships, they also have each other's backs.
people are really looking out for each other and for their neighbors. I think there's a strong network of support.
She says her experience working with people in Third Ward reminds her of how her friends and family from Sudan often had to fend for themselves.
I'm reminded kind of my own background and experiences I had growing up in a Sudanese community. I think there is a similar approach to, in the absence of outside support, we're going to take care of each other and we're going to check in on each other. And I think that's a strength that exists in those communities.
Aisha Siddiqui also says the refugees she works with are very tight-knit and supportive.
I know a few of these ladies who are always cooking and sending food to people. And if they know so-and-so is sick, they will cook something and send it to them. But right now, if the things are not available, how they can help?
She says without water, groceries, and electricity, they're limited to how much they can help each other out. I'm Elizabeth Trovall in Houston.
We know a lot of listeners were directly affected by this past week's storm. Behind the scenes here, nearly all of Team Texas Standard had to deal with power and water shutdowns and, in some cases, damage. In the spirit of finding solace in the sharing of experiences, our own Kristen Cabrera has been gathering voices from the storm from across the state.
As of this morning, most of the city of Austin, where I live, is still under a boil water and mandatory conservation notice. But at the beginning of this disastrous winter storm, my sister and I started off lucky. Our power and water were both working until Wednesday. With that in mind, I reached out to listeners about what they were going through. Like Tony Lofton in Richardson, she counted herself lucky too, but she worried about her 83-year-old dad in Porter outside of Houston.
It's worrisome because he's older and I just worry about his health and, any adverse outcomes from this situation, like stress of all of this on him.
In San Antonio, Olivia Lewis, a dorm RA at Trinity University, was dealing with her own worries about the storm and those under her care.
This is very anxiety-provoking. It's concerning. It's sad. I'm scared. As someone who's in a position to take care of people in this residence hall, I have to pretend like I know what's going on, and I really don't.
When Quay Garrett Emmons and her husband in Pflugerville, north of Austin, got their electricity back on Tuesday night, Quay went straight to digging.
I am using this time to research ERCOT, and I'm going to download the book The Grid and learn more about Texas energy struggles and the politics behind that. So I will understand why this is happening and how we got to now.
She is also 8 months pregnant and counting her blessings.
Lucky for me, I didn't get pregnant a month earlier or I would be in really big trouble right now.
If someone did have power, guesses were being made as to why. Some noted living next to a fire station or a hospital and possibly being on the same electrical grid. Zachary Chechevat in Austin did some digging of his own through the internet and thought he might have found answers.
I think we're connected to like a critical power grid, so we're doing pretty well. It's kind of messed up that we're figuring out, you know, why we have power based on like old internet documents.
Matt Schultz couldn't hide his astonishment. His power was out for 50 hours in Northwest Austin.
We were frustrated by how long the outage was, obviously, because we heard that there were going to be rolling blackouts, but there was nothing rolling about what we went through. That was maddening, especially in a state that generates so much power for the country and the world. It was maddening that we couldn't get this figured out in a winter storm in our own neighborhood.
Reports came in of power being out across the state from 50, 60, 70 plus hours. Carlos Sanchez, who you've heard on the show before, sat in the dark with his wife in their McAllen, Texas home for 126 hours.
It became frustrating, obviously, toward the end of the week when we began to see notices by ERCOT and our electric supply provider, AEP Texas, that the emergency was over, that power was being restored, and that first 80, then 90, then 95, then 99% of its customers had electricity back. We didn't.
Sanchez made an observation that echoes with almost everyone I know, and it's something I'm sure many listeners are thinking about as well.
One of the things that stood out about the entire week was how mentally exhausting this whole process and experience was.
Up in Richardson, it's been on the top of Tony Lofton's mind, too.
I just feel like this is just another stressor on top of the pandemic that we're all dealing with. I don't know. I feel like everyone is very exhausted after a year of the pandemic. You know, I worry about people's state of mind and mental health to have to deal with another crisis.
As we deal with the aftermath of this storm, some of it heartbreaking and tragic, we are also pivoting back to navigating the pandemic. Take a moment to be kind to yourself and others. Look at the outpouring of support in neighborhoods around you. And if you need help, because this is a lot, please reach out. For the Texas Standard, I'm Kristen Cabrera.
Support for Texas Standard comes from Raise Your Hand Texas, presenting the Intersect Ed Podcast, where the stories of Texas public education policy and practice meet. Available at raisedyourhandtexas.org/podcast and most podcast platforms. Support for Texas Standard comes from Texas Oncology, with more than 200 locations across the state to deliver comprehensive cancer care right here. Because family, friends, and caregivers play an important role in the fight against cancer. More at texasoncology.com.
It's the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. We know lots of you out there dealing with plumbing problems in the wake of that winter storm that hit Texas last week. And as water outages end across the Lone Star State, some of you who haven't had any issues yet may not be totally out of the woods, which is why we've invited Nikki Robbins onto the show to dispense some practical advice. She's a plumber and the owner of Nikki's Plumbing Company in Euless. Nikki, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Well, thank you so much for having me, David.
First of all, what has the past week or so been like for you work-wise?
It has been the most insane week of my entire career.
Really? What sort of things have you had to deal with?
Well, first off, the cold is really difficult to work in. And second off, I'm not used to my phone being blown up so much. It has rung nonstop. Even on a Sunday, I've had just calls after calls.
Wow.
And I don't normally get them this heavy. We're a small outfit here in the area, and we're just not used to the volume that we've gotten.
What are people complaining about? I guess burst water pipes being number one, right?
Right. What I'm also seeing is that other people, you know, that have normal standard service calls and can't get in the queue in order to fix their things like their faucets that are leaking or their water heaters that aren't working properly, you know, those kind of things. So it's crazy.
So as people start to get their water service returned, is there anything in particular they need to be mindful of? I mean, walk us through what they should do to make sure they don't have a pipe burst or something like that.
Well, I got to say, you know, I read a lot of things on the web about how, you know, as your pipes thaw out that they'll burst. And I have never seen that. I've been doing this for a really long time. Once the pipes thaw out, probably the best thing to do is to open all your faucets. And, you know, if you've had your water off and then you turn it on slowly, open all the faucets, turn the water on slowly and let any ice that might be in there, you know, escape through the biggest faucets that you have in the house, like your tubs or your showers.
Right. Okay. So we don't have to worry so much at this juncture, what with temperatures now above the freezing mark. We don't have to worry about them bursting, I wouldn't imagine.
No, I would say no.
You'd say no. Okay, well, very good. That's comforting to hear. Well, now, as the water comes back, it's possible that people will find that they do have burst pipes, I would imagine. Then what do you do?
Well, and then you go back out and turn the water off and give us a call, and we'll be happy to come out and fix it.
Yeah, that's when you go down to the street and turn it off.
Yeah, right.
Is there anything people should be especially on the lookout for? I would think that obviously people think about their taps, which are outside the house. But is there are there other vulnerable spots that people should be aware of?
Well, I would recommend that, you know, after everything is thawed out, like it probably already is, I would go around and open up all my outside faucets. because those are the weakest link in the whole system, is the, those frost-proof faucets. They have the 6-inch tube of copper that goes inside the wall, and they mm-hmm. shut off inside the wall. But that copper that's in between where it connects to the copper supply and the actual faucet is very thin. And if you've left a hose on, or even if it just drips, those things can burst, and you don't even know it until you actually go and open the faucet in the springtime. You got your hose connected to it. You're just out there watering your garden, and then all of a sudden your house is full of water because this hose bib has split.
Unfortunately, these kinds of crises do bring out scammers and the like. Mm-hmm. Do you have any tips for folks to make sure that the plumber or contractor that they might be reaching out to is actually reputable?
You know, I've heard so much in this last week about plumbers. And one of the things that really disturbs me is that putting your name on a list charges you $100 or something. I think that's just completely ridiculous and just uncalled for. You know, I gave up on that or anything like that many, many years ago. I would never do anything like that. And I can't believe that any of these companies out there that are doing that have any kind of reputation of being fair and honest. And Nikki's Plumbing Company, we base ourselves on honesty and integrity, and we'll never do anything like that.
So don't pay money to get on a list.
No,
repairs.
Right.
Right.
Stupid.
I would imagine, too, that that you have to be licensed to be a plumber, right?
That's correct. Although a lot of the plumbing industry is now using unlicensed plumbers because, one, it's hard to get a license. It's very difficult. It's very expensive. And so the industry is full of unlicensed plumbers. And, if you're not licensed, you're not exactly qualified.
So how do you find out if a plumber's licensed? Will they give you their license number if they are?
If they're asked, they should produce that license, yes.
Nikki Robbins is the owner of Nikki's Plumbing Company in Euless. Nikki, thanks so much for giving us these tips and sharing with our listeners. We certainly do appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard. Well, Dunbar, how's that internet holding out?
Oh, man, it wouldn't be a Monday following a major ice storm in the middle of a pandemic without a few
right.
technical glitches.
You don't
know
you know it?
Is.
Don't you? I do indeed. So what are you hearing from Texans on this Monday?
Well, we talked about the weather before, not quite like this. This change between what we saw and the weather today, it's almost like a cruel version of that old adage about Texas weather. If you don't like it, just wait a few moments and yeah. it will change. And we're hearing that sentiment noted by many of our friends and listeners. Shawnee Dempsey on our Facebook page says, the sunshine and warm temperatures makes it all feel like a bad dream. And that sentiment echoed here by Mary Ann Robinson Arnett. She says, normal felt strange at first, but she also goes on to echo something I think we heard from Ross Ramsey earlier in the show with the Texas Tribune. She says, now I'm concerned that Texans will quickly forget the pain of last week and not press for a change of the current lax grid accountability. You know, the old adage there goes that the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and whether this will sear itself into the minds of Texans demanding a change in accountability. One of these questions that remains to be seen. But people definitely have their own prescriptions for what should happen.
I bet they do.
Yeah. Here, another Facebook comment from Lindsay Breed Tootle. She says, without the support of the government, everyday people cannot survive disasters. A government is responsible for creating and enforcing rules, including the provision of public services. And Carolyn Kresick List, longtime listener, she says that she's hopeful Texans don't just chalk this up as the new norm. And she has three things she'd like to see happen. One, a full transparent investigation on what went wrong. Two, reasonable state regulations to ensure ERCOT is incentivized to follow through on things like winterization and grid resilience. And three, responsible regulations that set caps on electric rate increases. We heard about that on the show. It's been a big topic. Mm-hmm. These people seeing these insane electric bills, in many cases, after losing power for a couple days.
I was really interested in listening to Kristen Cabrera's story, she'd been hearing these voices from across the state, and how so many people are reading up on ERCOT and how the system works. I think that's a really fascinating development. And as we hear in those comments, people, obviously showing a real understanding of what's mm-hmm. been going on here. They've been tuned in to what's actually happening, and it's hard for me to believe that the pressure will... back off of that. I think that there are a lot of people upset. They know what's going on, and they're demanding some change.
Yeah, after being impacted in such a personal way for such a length of time, how could they not be? Well, just scanning the headlines, you know, national news reporting on the situation down here in Texas, and as they do from time to time, the New York Times discovering certain aspects of Texas. Here is the headline there. Texans needed food and comfort after a brutal storm. As usual, they found it at HEB. Yes, nice write-up about one of the state's favorite grocers there in the pages of the Times this morning, David.
Yep. You can keep up with the news 24/7 at TexasStandard.org. Shelley Brisbane, Caroline Covington, and Wells Dunbar are in charge of everything you see online. And we're awfully grateful for all they do and grateful to you for joining us. On behalf of the entire Texas Standard team, I'm David Brown. Thanks for listening.
Philanthropic support for Texas Standard comes from Casey and Scott O'Hare, the Winkler Family Foundation, Lynn Dobson and Greg Wooldridge, Adrian Killam, and the George Huntington Family.